Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Welcome to Mediocrity Podcast. Oh my goodness, I'm so glad to be back. It's episode number 30. It's a big episode. We've been together 30 episodes, and we love it. I'm Brian Kluger with BoomstickComics.com. And this is Mediocrity, where the show was just okay. Subscribe to us on iTunes under Multimedia Men. I am with Jonathan Atterbury in L.A. What's up,
what buddy? What is up, man? Not a whole lot. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. So for those of you who are just listening to the podcast, where we record mostly on Skype, and we're doing video. So I wonder what it's like to watch me do the intro.
It's really special because there's a lot of
it's riveting.
There's a lot of gesticulation happening. There's a lot of hand flailing.
There is, and you can't see that if you're just listening to it. But it's
no,
really
but
funny.
It's definitely happening.
So you're doing well?
I'm doing great. I'm working on getting my book, Powerful Mind, Powerful Body. It's currently an ebook available on Amazon, but I'm working on getting the print version available on Amazon as well.
I have read the book.
What did you think of the book?
I loved it, man.
I'm glad. Thank
you. It made me feel good about myself.
Well, good. That's what I want.
Has some good tips on leading a healthy life, not only physically, but mentally, too.
Thank you. I do what I can, man. I think that's one of the big problems, and one of the reasons why a lot of people aren't taking care of themselves is they feel crappy. And it's hard to give a shit about stuff if you're feeling crappy all the time.
Well, then, you did a good job, sir.
Thank you.
And then also we have Jeremy Maggart, the comic book artist extraordinaire. What's going on?
Oh, not much, man. How about you?
Doing all right. You got how's the comic book coming? And you're going to be at a future show, right? Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I have two shows booked right now. I'm going to be doing Fan Expo Dallas at the end of this month, which is going to be fun. And then I have an out-of-state con called Heroes Con, which is in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's in June. I've got both of those booked.
So I think you can still get tickets to both these shows, and you can go see Jeremy and get some of his awesome artwork and comics there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very good. So in today's show, episode 30, we've talked about a lot about comics, comic book movies, horror stuff, and, you know, one of it, like a big movie came out, and we all saw it finally. It was a little family film called Logan.
Totally family film.
It is a family film. Logan, which is the Wolverine movie that we've always wanted. Jeremy and Jonathan finally saw it. I loved it. You know, when I saw it a few weeks ago, right after the screening at night, I called both of them in a three-way conversation because I was so excited about the film that I just had to talk to somebody, and I know these guys would get it. So let's talk about your thoughts, because people probably know my thoughts because I've written the review already, but I want to know you guys, because you guys are really big into Wolverine. So Jeremy, let's start with you.
We also got to say, just there's going to be spoilers.
We can't talk
about it without there being a mountain of spoilers. So if you haven't seen it yet, now would be the time to not listen.
The movie's made like $90 million. A lot of people who are probably listening to this have already seen it.
Yeah, and the truth is that, you know, what's important about this movie isn't really the spoilers. I mean, that's not really why you're going to go see it. It's not like you're going to go watch M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Correct. So, Jeremy, Logan, thoughts?
Yes. Well, do you want me to start anywhere in particular or just in general?
Your initial thoughts, because I want both of your initial thoughts, really, because we'll just have a conversation about this. But, like, I know Wolverine's a very special character for you, and I know – I mean, I've talked to you about this, you know, prior to this show that we're recording right now about mm-hmm. Logan. I know it's emotional and everything, but I want to know what you guys think.
I was actually blown away by the movie. It was pretty much exactly what I wanted, but I was not even still remotely prepared for the movie that we were given.
In a good way or a bad way?
In a good way.
Okay.
Like, that was just one of the most emotional movies I think I've ever seen.
Wow. Wow.
And it was fantastic.
That's saying a lot. What about you, Jonathan?
I felt the same way. I mean, I was just like, so many times throughout that movie, I got goosebumps. And it's silly for me watching a superhero movie and getting fucking choked up every 5 minutes and just feeling so many emotions. and it's so true. I mean, you know, just the everything about it between the extreme violence and the brief moments of tenderness and sincerity that we got. It was a fantastic movie.
It was. You know, it proves that, I guess, Disney and Marvel can show more realistic films, kind of like, you know, like Dark Knight Rises or Dark Knight with Batman. Those are like more on the realer side of superhero movies, and they're dark and brooding and violent. But those people like that. And
I think that there's obviously a big market for people that want adult superhero movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And I'm so glad that it's happening, because thank God we're done with the Sam Raimi Spider-Mans and crap like that. I'm so glad.
I just so, have, so glad. Side note, we won't get into it, but I like Spider-Man 1 and 2 from Sam Raimi. I did not like 3, but 1 and 2 I enjoyed. But going back to Logan,
future episode for that.
Yeah, there is a future episode for that for sure. But you know, with Logan, you know, Wolverine as the character, he's always been like the almost the anti-hero. He's the bad boy. He is the one that deserves an R rating, and we have never gotten that all the way back from the year 2000 when Bryan Singer brought us the first X-Men. But now, you know, this is kind of a send-off movie, I think. Jeremy,
you could say he's the Rick Springfield of the comic book world.
It's a good way to put it. But Jeremy, what do you think about what we've lacked in, you know, Wolverine Origins or any of the X-Men movies or the prequels or the Wolverine from a few years ago? What do you think that we got more of in Logan that we haven't gotten before?
I feel like you get a little more of his grit and determination, I think, than you really get in a lot of the other movies. And for me, it's interesting, you know, it's like, you know, you compare all the different, you know, Wolverine movies and the X-Men movies and how much more tame they are. But to me, I feel like one of the things that made this one so special is because all those other ones were so much more kind of reserved in terms of action and gore and things like that. If we'd had 17 years of rated R Wolverine movies, it wouldn't have made this one, I think, as kind of impactful as it was for us and for everybody else.
So true.
So what did you like about Logan? Like, give me some bullet points. Give me like the things that you really like touched you in your mind, heart, and crotch.
For me, I liked that he was basically trying to find a way to scrape by and save money while taking care of Professor Xavier in Mexico after Xavier basically unintentionally wiped out all of the X-Men, and he was just trying to find a way to keep Xavier away from a populated area, which is why he wanted to buy that boat so he could just basically take him out on the ocean and care for him without having to worry about, you know, him hurting anyone.
Yeah. Jonathan, what about you?
That whole part of the story was really touching because, you know, at that and of course the scene of spoiler once again when Xavier died and he's burying him, and you can just see it like that was the last person that he had in his life that he cared about really, or that he was close with. And that whole scene where he's burying him was just so emotional. And then he goes out in the truck, and they had that perfect scene afterwards of him just cursing and, you know, shit, fuck, beating the hell out of his truck with a shovel. And that was just the perfect little counterpoint to the extreme sadness of the previous scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And I want to touch on Xavier's character here, because pretty much almost through any comic book or any film or TV show that we've seen Professor Xavier, Charles Xavier, in, he's been like the healthy, well, you know, he can't walk, but he healthy, clear-minded guy that, that basically helps everybody along. But here he is an old man who's suffering from a form of, you know,
dementia. Alzheimer's, I think.
Dementia. What is it? He's suffering from, it's like a neurological disease, I believe.
I forget whether they said it was ALS or Alzheimer's or something like that.
I don't know if they said, I think they just said a degenerative brain disease. Yeah, I don't remember them saying specifically what it was.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And he has horrible seizures that actually affect his telepathy that could actually kill people around him, which, you know, in the film it's alluded to that he had a seizure and it wiped out the mutants, right?
Yeah, it wiped out the X-Men.
It wiped out the X-Men.
So,
which was an interesting touch, because in the Old Man Logan comic book, Wolverine is actually the one that's responsible for killing the X-Men, and I like that they still kept that story point in the movie, but they flipped it and basically had Xavier was the one that killed the X-Men on accident.
Well, because in the comic book Old Man Logan, which a lot of people think this is based on, and it's not, there's small elements of it, but yeah, I mean, you can't, because back then there's still a bunch of mutants around, and it's, you know, Mysterio is a bad guy who, you know, disguises everybody as enemies, and Wolverine attacks him, and then he finds out that they're all his friends. But to have Xavier as this, you know, sick man who's on the verge of death, who is in and out of being himself, is a very scary thought and very emotional. And Patrick Stewart played him perfectly. Like, I think he deserves like an Oscar for it. That's how good he was.
He was fantastic in that role.
He was really good. And you really feel for him, because, like, you know, and you finally got to see the Wolverine Xavier relationship as like they're actually
father son.
Well, father son and good friends. Like, they have, you know, banter like good old friends would have, in a way, you know, because they give each other shit a lot.
Yeah, because they're the old, you know, what we also forget in a lot of the movies is that they're, you know, Wolverine might be older than Professor X. So they're of similar age.
Oh, because, yeah, we've seen Wolverine, like, what, in, like, World War II and...
Yeah, you're right. So he's even older.
Yeah.
So to have him taking care of him, you know, because in the previous movies, X was always the father figure. And now to have it kind of switch around where Logan was having to take care of Professor X, that was a really cool kind of poetic end to it.
It was, and just the way he portrayed Xavier in this film, like, I mean, it's different from all the other films, is just so, it makes your heart hurt, but also it's heartwarming, and you're like, man, this is getting real, really fast, too.
Oh, so much realness. So one of the things that stood out to me about what was hitting me about this movie was, you know, in the previous X-Men movies, anytime we've seen Wolverine, there's always a moderate amount of violence. They always are holding back, and that detaches you from how fucking brutal it is. But when you're watching this movie, every time you're watching Wolverine get attacked, you just go, oh my god, that, like, it brings home the fact that he's getting the shit kicked out of him all the time. And you know, when you see the scars on him and just see how much pain he's in all the time. And then, when you know, in that one of the scenes where he's fighting the younger version of himself, another spoiler here, and he's just getting fucking shredded. That was just, I mean, it's to the point where when I was watching it, my hands, I was sweaty like palms. And I was like just totally gripping the edge of my seat. I was so stressed out by these scenes, but it was so much more important because of that.
All right. And Jeremy, you feel the same way with Charles Xavier and the violence in it?
Absolutely. Right. To me, it was just the perfect blend of the things that they needed to feel grounded and feel like real life were perfectly executed. And then, you know, when it came to things like the more fantastic elements like Xavier's mental powers or seeing mutant stuff go on, I mean, just everything was executed just so well on both ends that it just went great.
Good, 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 good.
Now, I've got a theory about the movie, but it might take a minute for me to explain my theory, so I don't want to derail the conversation.
No. Let's do it. Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
All right, so my theory is that this movie was far more of a mirrored experience of what Hugh Jackman has gone through than what a lot of people recognize, I believe. So we've got old man Wolverine. You can say, okay, we have old man Hugh Jackman. And my Siri just heard me say that and was like, what? What are we talking about right now? So we've got old man Hugh Jackman, who's been getting the shit kicked out of him playing Wolverine for 16 or 17 years now. He's got to the point where we know this was his last movie as Logan. So he's tired of it. And one of the main reasons he's done is he says it's always been too demanding on him to be in the physical condition that he needs to be to play Wolverine. So in this movie, we've got him. He can barely keep up anymore. And what's his job in the movie? It's to pass the torch. It's to keep the younger mutants going. It's to let them take over. Rather, so he's keeping them alive so they can do it. So he's been, we could say, okay, Hugh Jackman's been doing this role forever to keep the movies going, to keep the X-Men franchise alive, because nobody else cared about the X-Men franchise in any other regard. It was literally just Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart were the things that kept the X-Men franchise going. So he's been passing the torch this whole time, but he's finally done with it. And one of the things we see is, what's he having to do towards the end of the movie just to have that final stretch? He has to inject himself with this drug that makes him feel better, makes him feel stronger. That's a very obvious steroid reference, in my opinion. So I'm not going to go out and say that Hugh Jackman's been doing steroids to be Wolverine, but I'm going to go ahead and say that maybe he has. and I never really thought too much about that until I saw this movie. And I was like, oh my God, this is such an obvious analogy for the fact that to do the Wolverine, perhaps Hugh Jackman was having to use HGH, testosterone, something along those lines, just to keep himself in the kind of young man, perfect physical condition, even though these kind of drugs are bad for your health ultimately. Because this one drug, he said, well, what's the side effect of it? It allows you to keep you going a little bit more. It allows you to recover faster and stuff like this, but it makes you crazy. That's an obvious steroid analogy. So...
You have gone off the rails, my friend.
No. It makes perfect sense. So he does this drug to keep himself alive for one more stint so he can be young and kicking ass one more time. But what's his ultimate enemy in this movie? The ultimate enemy is the younger version of himself. So he's being pursued by the younger, perfect version of himself. You know, we saw young Wolverine. He's always having to stay one step ahead of the younger, perfect version of himself, even though he's now an old man. And what's he have to do to be able to fight the younger version of himself? He has to use steroids.
And that's it?
And then at the end of it, he's dead. You know what I mean? He's done. He's done with it all. He's... use the steroids to do this one last stretch. He does his job, and then he's done. To me, that could very well translate to just exactly what Hugh Jackman has experienced.
So, I mean, I guess we'll never know, but I don't think he's taking steroids.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say, okay, if you look at his physical condition in the Wolverine, it is incredible. He is way lean, way shredded, way big. To say that it's impossible to do that naturally is not true. But for someone that's the age that he was when he was doing that, it is incredibly hard and unlikely that most people can attain that. Because even if we look at his physical condition in the first Wolverine movie, he when he was 25 or 30, whatever he was in a completely different body than when he was, you know, I don't know how old he was, 46 or something like that when he did the Wolverine. And
you have points here, and I like that you said that, yeah, his enemy is himself, but I think it's more, you know, of his own worst enemy is himself, and he has to come through that. I don't think it has anything to do with his drug intake, but he is like 5,000 years old, so he has to have.
I mean, like the way that it mirrors Hugh Jackman's personal experience with it. I mean, if we just look at the character, you know, what Wolverine is going through in the movie, I think that that actually mirrors a lot what Hugh Jackman's experience has been, where the younger version of himself in the movies is what he's trying to beat.
No, I think he wants to end his life. I think that's what he wants to do. He does not want to live anymore because...
That's what the character wants to do. I'm saying how it mirrors his real life experience.
Oh, I think Hugh Jackman loves playing Wolverine. I think, yeah, he's...
It's been killing him.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's been killing him, but I know I think he wants to go out on a high note and not overstay his welcome.
But the big reason he wants to be done with the role is because of the incredible amount of physical ass kicking it gives him every time he does these things.
I don't know. Jeremy, come on. Come in here. And
come in and say.
You know, I don't know if it's supposed to be a metaphor for the steroids. I do agree with John that's why he's decided to stop doing it, was because of just the physical toll that it takes for him to actually prepare himself, like, for the role. You know, to me, I feel like the younger self, the kind of like younger version of him in that movie, I feel like his entire life he's constantly struggled against the feral side of his personality, like the animal that's inside him, and he's always struggled with that. But the other thing he's always struggled with is the things that he's done in the past. And there's a very important thing in the movie, the difference with this, that I don't think comes up in a lot of the other ones, but they actually in this movie reveal what his real name is, and that's James Howlett.
Yes.
And so he's going by that. And so the fact that he knows what his name is alludes to the fact that at some point his mind has been unlocked and he's recovered all of his memories that were gone. So then he knows all of his like past mistakes and everything that he's done wrong, because in the comic books that gets unlocked, and there were, I think, a good couple years in the comic book where he spends like just punishing himself, like running around picking fights with people that he can't beat and just getting destroyed because he's trying to atone for his past mistakes. And I feel like in this case, what you have with that, when the younger clone of him pops up, that's basically what he's fighting against. He's fighting against his own feral nature, and he looks at that thing and sees all of, you know, his past transgressions, and the movie becomes about him overcoming all of that stuff.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I mean, I know that's what they're doing with the character of Wolverine. Mm-hmm. I think that was awesome. I really like what they did with that. But what I was saying was that how, even though that's obviously what they were doing and the motivation behind it for Wolverine, if we look at it from the Hugh Jackman perspective, it does add that other layer of – now, maybe they didn't mean to do it. Maybe I was seeing something that wasn't there.
I think you are.
But to me, that made it even more important. To me, watching this movie, you know, because what it is a fantastic send-off for Hugh Jackman. He's put 17 years of his life into this character, and he's put himself through physical hell to be this character and provide us with so much enjoyment of this. So for him to have this awesome send-off was so great. And that scene at the end where they bury him and put the cross down, and then they're like, oh no, let's turn this into an X. It's just like knives in the fucking heart.
Well, but you know, it's one of them is that, you know, in those last, in like his basically his death scene, he finally realizes that, yeah, life is about family and love and not about, you know,
not about being Wolverine.
Yes.
He wants to be with his family and his kids.
Exactly. And, you know, as all we always seen him, Wolverine is the loner. He's the one guy who wants to be alone.
Right.
So it only makes sense that he would fight himself, you know?
Yep.
And not anybody else.
But one thing I also noticed was how much they made young Wolverine look like fucking Sabretooth.
So supposedly there was talk when the script was being written about including Sabretooth in the film, but they didn't do it, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, like, when he first showed up as young clone Wolverine, I was like, oh my God, it's Liev Schreiber. Like, that's exactly what I thought until I realized it wasn't, because at no point in the movies did Logan have that haircut. But that's the exact same look that Liev Schreiber had in the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually thought it was going to be Sabretooth, because when they're kind of hunting him with the whole crew and they're using Caliban to track, there's like a flatbed truck that has this like this box with all these, you know, like basically air holes on it. And I was like, oh, man, I was like, ooh, I was like, Sabretooth might be in that box.
Oh, that's what I was hoping for.
But I, you know, I was hoping for Sabretooth, but the way they did it, I was in the end, I was glad that they left him out. And they didn't, you know, kind of bring in that past and the other storyline, and, you know.
Yeah, it would have taken away from what they were trying to do.
Yeah, it would have kind of pulled a little bit out of the storyline. So while I really wanted a super bloody Wolverine Sabretooth fight, I ended up being okay with it.
Did you think that the how much the young version of himself looked like Liev Schreiber, do you think that was an accident?
I don't know if I think it was intentional. I think the reason that they gave – I assume the reason that they gave him the shorter hair was because some of their fighting is at night, and it made it – was another way for you to visually tell them apart with a little bit more of a silhouette.
Gotcha. No. One thing I also noticed was that the outfit he was wearing through so much of the movie, where he's got the dress pants and the blazer and the white unbuttoned collar, was mm-hmm. the same exact – outfit that Liev Schreiber wears in Ray Donovan. Like, that's like the uniform he wears in that show.
That's pretty funny. I did not notice that, but that's great.
These are the things I think about when I watch these movies.
I'm glad you do. And you know,
so Brian, you don't agree with my theory about this being a analogy for Hugh Jackman's personal experience with these movies?
No.
Okay, that's you're allowed to not agree. No. I just thought it was interesting. I just this was something that I saw, and it made me appreciate it more.
No, I think when they did this, I think they were. I mean, Hugh Jackman has said that, you know, he wants to, you know, he's thinking about doing a certain number of them, and then. When he was probably saying, like, yeah, this will probably be my last one because, you know, I've done so many, and then I can do, because Hugh Jackman in person is like a song and dance theater guy. So it was very weird for him to take on Wolverine, but he did a great job, like the perfect job with it. And so I think he wants to get and do more things or spend more time with his family, because he's making like $50-100 million for this Wolverine, so he doesn't have to like keep shucking along with it.
Right.
But I mean, with this film and James Mangold's vision of it, along with the writers Scott Frank and Michael Green, it's just kind of like, okay, so where do we go from here? You know, this, and to take it from the old man Logan perspective and show it as, you know, this kind of like the end of, you know, the whole X-Men franchise.
But it's an alternate universe end to the X-Men franchise.
This is the end to like the film version for sure. Like, because, you know,
no, they're already, haven't they already said that they're making another X-Men movie with the whole, like, you know, ones that they did for the last X-Men Armageddon movie?
Yes, but I doubt that
Apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
Correct,
yeah.
But Apocalypse takes place way before.
Well, with the meteor where it comes to the Earth and Bruce Willis saves everybody. That
exactly.
Movie.
Ben Affleck, yeah. Bruce Willis, Liv Tyler.
Batman.
But all of that will take place before Logan in the timeline.
Well, I think what they did with this one was that this was just like so many comic book stories where we've seen where it's like a what if. This is a alternate possibility for what could be happening in the future.
Well, it sets up for, you know, the X-23, the X-Force, you know, all of that coming into play. So,
well, I think one thing that was interesting that they did, that they threw in the movie also to make it feel more grounded, was making the X-Men comics a big part of the movie.
Which was awesome, because that's what, in the year 2029 where this film takes place, you know, Logan Wolverine is an Uber driver.
Yeah.
And he, you know, when people talk about mutants, it's kind of like almost folklore. It's almost like they're in the comics, and they actually show the comic books that we read.
At the end, that's holding the Wolverine figure. Oh my God, fucking crushing my soul.
That was so awesome to see that, the little kid holding the Wolverine figure. That was so awesome. But that's what, in this film, how dark it is, that's what the mutants are remembered as, only comic book legend. And that's why, you know, Xander Rice, played by Richard E. Grant, the head of the Transigen Project, that he wants to wipe out mutants, basically.
Well, he wants to control them, as he said. He doesn't want to wipe them out. He wants to control them.
Well, in a certain way. he wants them gone. Because
I'm standing by my theory about how this movie was just a big analogy for the Hugh Jackman thing. I really, the more I think about that, the more I'm going to go ahead and dig into my position.
I am not. Okay, so we all thought Hugh Jackman did an excellent job playing basically three characters. He's playing, you know, the human side, James Howlett. He's playing Wolverine, and he actually played X-24, which was the clone of Wolverine. It's a lot to take. And he's in basically every scene in the movie. So he did an excellent job, and I really do think Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart deserve awards for their acting performance here.
No doubt. They absolutely do. And one thing that I think one of the most exciting scenes in the entire movie for me was at the very end when he does inject himself with the magic serum, testosterone, and then he goes into the exact same mode that he was in at the end of the second X-Men movie, where he's running through the forest just fucking kicking ass, and he's just like slicing people and he's screaming, and then he does that famous Wolverine lunge with the double claw into the chest, and just seeing that, it was so exciting. That was one of the scenes that gave me chills.
Oh, good. Jeremy, what about you?
For scenes with chills?
Yeah, scenes that you loved.
One of my favorites was when they were in Tulsa and Xavier's like brain bombing the whole place, and Wolverine's walking down the hallway and he's like struggling with the claws, and then he gets to the doorway where the guy is frozen, and the only thing that the guy can move is his eyes, and so like he just like looks sideways and he has just like the sheer look of like terror.
Damn it, he knows. Damn it.
He knows he's about to die, and he can't move. And I think he was the only one of those guys that was paralyzed like that, but that saw Wolverine, you know, basically saw Wolverine coming for him.
Saw death coming your way.
Yep.
That was a great moment.
That was such
a slow motion with the claws and everything. Oh, it was so great.
Yeah, and you know what?
It was so good.
It was so good, and I love the – what Atterbury mentioned earlier was the reaction of – Logan to Xavier's death by beating the shit out of the truck. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the scene right before where he's like really trying to hold back the tears. That was just so good.
That it was good. And I loved all the wit, the funny banter between Xavier and Logan.
Between Logan and Laura too. I loved the way they interacted, where he's like, "Don't hit me in the face."
So Laura,
Stop saying that right now.
Laura, or X-23 in the film, the little girl in the film and on the posters, she's played by Daphne Keene, who is or Daphne Keene Fernandez. She is a badass, like, holy God. And this is like her only thing she has been in. She was in a TV series called The Refugees, which I don't think anybody has seen, but this is like her first thing, and she was so badass as this strong, brave kid who could seriously handle Wolverine and Xavier in their worst states. And like the bilingual language that she was doing, it was just so good. I want to see her in like everything now.
She was excellent. And I'm about to look up one thing because I kept on looking at her going, she looks like somebody else. And I'm about to, I can't really think of the character's name. So I'm going to look that up while we're talking here.
Okay. Who does she look like?
She looks like the kid, the longer haired, black haired kid from Mars Attacks. Do you know? Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, she looks just like that fucking kid.
It's not.
And I have no idea what this actor's name was or anything. Lucas Haas. There we go.
the boy from Solar Babies. I get it.
And he was in Inception and The Revenant and Witness. He was the main kid from Witness with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
The little Amish boy.
He was in Solar Babies. I know.
She looks just like that guy.
Well.
But she was fantastic. I mean, I digress.
She was badass. Like, seriously, she probably... How much fun do you think she had filming that with all the action scenes and going to tear up people?
Oh, I'm sure she had a huge amount of fun. And just they obviously did a lot of martial arts with her and stuff like that to get her being able to do some of the things that she was doing. It was so cool. She was basically a little tiny Black Widow with claws.
Yeah, I agree.
And like her super sharp toenails.
Indeed. Did you like her, Jeremy?
Yeah, I thought she did a great job. I was super pleased. A lot of times whenever you have like the kid parts in a lot of movies, that always ends up being kind of a weak spot. But everything was, everything was just executed so well. And it's like, man, there was not one single moment when she was in the movie that I did not 100% buy it. And like, yeah. I love that scene when she got shot and she basically like took her teeth and dug the bullet out with her teeth and then spit out the bullet.
Oh, that was so cool.
I was like, man, that's so great. I was like, that's such just like a fantastically Wolverine thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
There are very few times when I look at a 9-year-old girl and I think, man, I want to be her. Yeah. That was one of those moments.
Well, she is basically more or less the daughter of Logan.
It was awesome.
So what did y'all think of Caliban in this film, played by Stephen Merchant, who, of course, was in the HBO show Hello, Ladies, and the British version of The Office?
It was all right. I mean, to me, it was one of the parts that didn't really matter of the movie, honestly. I mean, as much as I think he did a good job, a solid performance, it was fairly irrelevant, right, in my opinion.
I didn't actually know it was Caliban until, like, they got a little bit further into the movie and actually officially were like, you know, revealed who he was. It wasn't totally obvious up front that that's who the character that he was playing.
Now, mistake me or correct me if I'm mistaken, but wasn't Caliban in the last X-Men movie?
Yes, but he was played by a different guy.
Yeah, I mean, but at the same, it was that was the same character, right?
Same character, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
So
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. That it is interesting. That was, but the timeline, I mean, I think we're just so far in the future and just everything's gone to shit, because from Apocalypse and to Logan's very much aged. And I loved seeing that his middle adamantium claw not really doing its job, like slowly coming out and not going the full distance. And like,
it hadn't been greased properly.
Yeah, he's falling
he's
apart.
He's a WD-40 on that fucker.
He's falling apart, man. And it was great.
Oh, yeah, and when he was like, there was pus healing in his knuckles because they weren't healing up fast and stuff like that. That was a really good touch where you're just looking at it going, oh, that looks like it hurts so bad.
And it was great to see that Xander Rice was the descendant of the guy from X2 that tried to wipe out the X-Men, right? Wasn't that right? Jeremy, am I wrong?
Well, I forget which guy they said. He was a descendant, but I forget which character he was a descendant of.
From
but their goal is to not really wipe them out. It's to kind of control them.
Control them.
Turn them into weapons.
Yeah.
So who I'm looking it up right now. He in X-Men 2, Colonel William Stryker isn't the guy.
Well, he's the guy who created Logan. I mean, he created Wolverine, rather.
Well, yeah, in the movie he was the military guy that was the head of the but I don't think he's supposed to be a descendant of him. I think he's supposed to be a descendant of one of the doctors that actually was like doing that adamantium bonding process and everything else.
Okay,
I don't think he was supposed to be a Stryker descendant.
Okay, all right. Well, moving on to like influences of Logan. Like, this was like, in my review, I was like, this is an excellent Western film. And they even, like, show visuals of Westerns on television, such as Shane, in the film, in Logan. And I thought, I mean, this was like a perfect Western movie, I thought. What'd you think?
I agree. I think I saw a lot of similarities between this and what was the one Jeff Bridges was in? The Western
True
movie
Grit.
Jeff True Grit. I saw a lot of echoes from that into this movie, where it's the same kind of thing, where in True Grit, you've got the old guy. I know it's a remake of the John Wayne movie, but you've got the old tough guy who's helping the young girl get where she needs to get and kind of sacrifices himself to get her safe.
Yeah. No, I agree. What about you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't really watched a whole lot of Westerns, so I'm definitely not the authority on it, that's for sure.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, I love the film, and, you know, we've seen so many films in these first, like, 2 months and a week, and usually at the start of the year you get terrible, terrible movies, but we've had John Wick 2, we've had Get Out, we've had Logan. Holy God, what a good way to start a year. And Logan, I mean, would you be surprised if it – would you not be surprised if it's nominated for an Oscar?
I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean,
it should.
I think that freaking Hugh Jackman deserves it as best actor. He at least deserves to be nominated.
Yes, I agree. As well as Patrick Stewart. He did so good.
It's a good gateway movie for all the kind of superhero genre movies to actually start to get nominated when they're worthy of it.
Yeah, and be taken seriously.
Yeah.
As real movies. I love that they're doing something. Hopefully this will be a big gateway into doing different things with superhero movies and not just having, you know, the typical formula for a superhero movie, sky buttholes opening up and just big boss fights at the end and stuff like that. We don't always want to see the exact same thing.
Correct.
I mean, so this was a really nice twist on all of it to give you some different flavor and make, you know, show that you that superhero movies can be more than just the standard formula that's been used so far.
So where do you think the X-Men franchise will go now?
I think it won't matter. I think that, you know, if Patrick Stewart and...
Well, where do you want to see it go?
I think that they need to do a full reboot and give it to different people.
Like, start from the beginning again?
Apocalypse sucked. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Apocalypse sucked. The only X-Men movie that's been any good in the last long time was the X-Men First Class.
Okay.
And I think that movie was awesome, but the rest of them have been just various levels of disappointing.
Okay.
So I want to see it. I think X-Men First Class was cool because it was fresh and it was disconnected from the existing, you know, Magneto being portrayed by Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart, and all those. It was disconnected from that world. And then the problem was, as soon as they were done with that, they're like, okay, cool, we're going to mush these universes back together again. And that's when it started getting messy and obnoxious.
So I'm reading things. So Simon Kenberg, who's been a part of the X-Men film franchise, so the next X-Men film will be set in the 1990s. Sophie Turner this year said that the production on that film will be starting very soon. There's a second Deadpool film, and it will feature the X-Force getting together, and also that there are films of X-23, Alpha Flight, and the Exiles in development stages, but no, like, I guess X-Men, the next X-Men film with people that we know now is going to be set in the 1990s. So I don't know.
See, it's like, does it really matter when they're set either? Like, that's another thing is they said, the last X-Men movie was set in the 80s, and it was
It does for X-Men comic book fans. It matters hugely.
Well, I mean, I
so why does it matter?
It matters in that regard, but I just felt like I didn't get it. That it didn't matter that much in the last X-Men movie we saw, because as much as I wanted to see the classic, like, X-Men cartoon kind of world, it feels like they just kind of glazed over so much of that, and the characters were irrelevant, like Psylocke and all those other people we had. Nightcrawler was just Nightcrawler, and it wasn't that much different from what we saw in X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. The time frame matters a lot. when they made X-Men Apocalypse, it was very much an X-Men movie for people that have been reading the comic books for like 20 and 30 years. So for those people, ever since they started doing where they kind of rebooted and they put X-Men First Class in the 60s, the one thing that they've all been waiting for is for the 90s X-Men movie. And that's like from an era when like Jim Lee was the penciler, was drawing it, and Chris Claremont was the writer. And there's just it's kind of like just right in what's considered to be like the quintessential golden age of the X-Men universe.
Right.
And that's what all of the hardcore X-Men fans have been waiting for, is they've been waiting for the 90s X-Men movie.
What I mean is that I hope that they take that, because I get mm-hmm. that's really important.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that made X-Men First Class so good, is that they were taking that era of X-Men and doing something that felt like it was a fair representation of that. But with X-Men Apocalypse, I feel like they took the 80s X-Men and just didn't really capture the feel of it. You know, even visually, mm-hmm. it wasn't really what we wanted to see. So
yeah.
I hope that if they give us a 90s X-Men movie, that it will feel like a movie based in that era of the comic books, where
yeah.
you're seeing costumes and characters that all actually match up, and it's not just this mishmash of little things that they've picked up.
Yeah.
I want to see Gambit being represented well.
I want them to embrace the little bit more traditional X-Men costumes. The thing that I find disappointing is I feel like when I look at all of the Marvel X-Men movies, all of the costumes look like they're rejected Thor costume movie designs.
That's a very good point.
Like, basically all of the costume designs, and even a lot of the stuff, like when I even look at Henry Cavill's Man of Steel suit, like I look at that and I'm like, that just looks like you are like, hey, make him look like, you know, he's from Asgard.
Yeah.
You know,
or Spider-Man.
So, yeah. And you know, it's got like all like the detail on the cuffs and everything else. And so that to me is, I really want them to embrace the actual authentic, you know, I don't want spandex, but I don't want it to look like they're trying to make it look like it's a Marvel Universe movie.
Absolutely. I think because to me, if we look at like the 90s X-Men, that's when they all really, they weren't really trying to have the uniforms for each, mm-hmm. like where they all look the same. They were
yep.
really embracing the uniqueness of each character, and what that person wore versus what that person wore was very different.
Yeah.
They weren't uniforms, as far as I'm remembering correctly, right?
Yeah.
And right. I want to see that. That's exactly what I want to see, is that feeling of individuality from each character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it. And what's it called? I hope they do a good job, just like they do, like you said, with Gambit. Because I know they're still trying to do Gambit with Channing Tatum. they really are. They are.
I know they are.
They're in their next X-Men movie, which I guess is tentatively titled Supernova, which might go the Dark Phoenix route, which we've kind of seen already, but. If they stick to
tired of seeing fucking all that same stuff over and over. I feel like every X-Men movie is just rehashing itself to a certain extent.
Exactly. That's what makes this so good. And that's why, I mean, I love Channing Tatum. And I would like to see a good movie like Logan be done with such a cool character like Gambit.
But aren't you disappointed thinking about Gambit being played by fucking Channing Tatum?
I like Channing Tatum. He's awesome. So yes,
he's
I'm very
horrible.
Excited. He's
he is one of the worst actors of this generation, if not the worst. He's so bad. I fucking hate that guy.
That's for another podcast for sure.
So something I was thinking was pretty funny was, I know that when they were talking about kind of rebooting the X-Men stuff and the X-Force route, because Wolverine technically is in some of the X-Force stories, was they were like, oh, well, what we're going to do is we're going to put X-23 in those movies. That way we don't have to worry about recasting, you know, Hugh Jackman's Wolverine and everybody being like, oh, man, Hugh Jackman was better. It just sucked. Well, now what's funny is you had X-23 in this Wolverine movie played by like a 10-year-old girl. And she was super badass. And now you're going to have somebody who's going to be like 25 or whatever, who's going to take it over. And everybody's going to be like, oh, man, the 10-year-old girl was better.
Yeah.
If they knew what was good for them, they would just let her do it. And because, I mean, like we saw Hit Girl in Kick-Ass and everyone loved it. So just let her be, you know, Hit Girl in the next X-Men movie, for Christ's sake.
The problem is, though, if they do that, it's you'll get some weird continuity things because I think that the X-Force movie that Ryan Reynolds is writing takes place, I think, in modern time.
Yeah.
Well, the X-Men universe has never cared about continuity. Agreed. In the movies, rather, the film universe.
Agreed. All right. Logan stuff. So before we get to our questions from our audience, because we ask questions on social media and we have a couple questions that we'll answer, I want to first, several people who live in the Dallas area who listen to the podcast have come up to me and said that they really love our segment on casting Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart and things. More recently, a fan and a friend named Mitchell Blumka was like, you got to bring that back. So in lieu of Logan, what superhero movie or superheroes would you want to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart play?
I think we need Dwayne The Rock Johnson to.
Are we doing this in the Marvel universe since we're talking Logan, or are we just talking in general?
Let's do the Marvel universe because we can save the DC one for another time.
Man, I need more time to have a good joke here.
Well, wouldn't it be great to see? Let's see here. I'm trying to think. I mean, I guess I would like to see Dwayne The Rock Johnson as like a version of Wolverine and like Kevin Hart as Cyclops. It would be awesome. Why not? Maybe.
Would it be awesome?
It would be awesome. Come on. Why not?
I maybe, sure.
Okay. All right.
I think I wouldn't mind seeing Dwayne The Rock Johnson be Captain America.
Oh, that would be
and
funny.
And Kevin Hart as Bucky, you know?
As Bucky?
But like, it needs
to be old
Captain America, where Bucky's wearing that ridiculous, you know, blue and white outfit.
Yes.
And so we need that I could see.
I like it. Or Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Wolverine and Kevin Hart as X-23. That would be so good. Jeremy, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to keep it, I'll keep it X-Men related since we talked Logan and go with Dwayne as Colossus. Then you can just paint him silver and you're good to go. And
no CG required.
Yeah, no CG required. And Kevin Hart will just make him tiny little Iceman.
Tiny little Iceman. What about
going back to the first introduction of Wolverine in the Hulk comic and having The Rock play the Hulk and Kevin Johnson just being Wolverine and just watching them fight each other?
That would be pretty awesome. I
wouldn't mind seeing The Rock be the Hulk. I think that would be, you know, a good throwback to the Lou Ferrigno days where it's just a really jacked dude painted green.
He went as the Hulk for Halloween a couple years ago.
Yeah, and he looked awesome. I would totally buy that.
That would be cool. I like it. I like it a lot.
I do agree, though, that we need to bring back the Kevin and Dwayne segment at the end of every show, because at least once a week I'll be watching a movie and I'll be like, oh, this should be a Kevin and Dwayne project.
Well, write it down.
I will. I'll get back to doing that.
All right. All right. Cool. So
we'll do that next week.
We will do that next week. Let's move on to the questions, though. I've got a question from Jacob Rice. He's an awesome dude. Good writer as well. He has a question that asks.
I can't believe we actually have questions.
We do. Why does James Mangold?
I actually thought you were making that up.
No, we do. We have a question. Why does James Mangold hate Joy so much? James Mangold is the director of Logan, as well as The Wolverine, 310 to Yuma, Walk the Line, Identity, Copland, as well as Girl Interrupted, Kate and Leopold, and Night and Day.
So, like, why are his movies so damn depressing, you mean?
Yeah, why does he hate Joy so much?
I don't know. Maybe we got to look back at James Mangold's childhood.
He was born.
There may be some sadness.
He was born and raised in New York City.
I don't know
City.
Him personally.
He was born and raised in New York City, so he's got the hustle and the bustle. and he was, I guess, taught by what was he? He was taught by Alexander MacDendarick, who directed the original Lady Killers movie, and The Sweet Smell of Success. But as far as that, I think he just likes that
heavy feel.
Yeah,
what we see a lot of the movie. They're heavy, but they're also impactful, and they're excellent movies in almost all cases.
And it's funny you bring that up because James Mangold's first film was titled Heavy.
How apropos.
Yes, how apropos. But, you know, interestingly enough, James Mangold's next film he will direct is Captain Nemo for Disney. So
they're going to make a Captain Nemo movie? I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, it is a Captain Nemo movie for Disney.
This is unrelated to Finding Nemo, right?
Correct. This is Captain Nemo. It's basically...
The fish grows up, and now he's a captain.
Yeah, exactly. Captain of the underwater boat.
Yep. Yeah, it's...
He gives orders from a fish tank.
Which is, yeah, it's weird because there's, like, talks about, like, a 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea remake and all sorts of stuff, so...
Well, that would be that, right? If they're doing a Captain Nemo movie, wouldn't it essentially be a continuation of that story? Maybe not the exact same one, but it's that character.
Yeah, it is that character, but it might be different movies, but yeah, that is...
I'm into that. That's cool.
What he's slated to do, and, I mean, the guy's a good director. 3:10 to Yuma is, like, a perfect movie. Night and Day sucked.
This is the remake one with Christian Bale, correct?
Correct.
That he did? Okay. Yes.
Damn good movie. Identity was great with John Cusack. Copland with Sylvester Stallone was excellent.
Identity is a great movie. That's one of those movies that came out so long ago that was so under the radar. Many people have not seen that. Usually when I meet somebody, I'm like, oh yeah, I might bring up that movie, and then they'll be like, oh, I never saw that. So I've introduced so many people to that movie, and it's always a lot of fun.
I'm glad you liked it. Do y'all have any questions that you shared
for us?
Yes. Well, I mean, like, did you? I know you shared.
Who are you talking? Are you talking to me and him?
Do you have questions about this movie? No. Did y'all get
I wanted to ask Jonathan.
Did you get any questions from anybody?
No. That's why I was so surprised that you got any.
No.
Normally people don't care when I ask stuff. I had a question for you though, Brian. So you saw Get Out, right?
I saw Get Out.
Tell us about it. I want to know because I'm very interested in this movie. I want to see it.
Okay, so Get Out is a movie that's out right now. If after you see Logan, seriously, Get Out is just as good as Logan, but for different reasons. Logan is written by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame.
Written by Jordan Peele?
No, did I say that? No, Get Out is written by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame. You know, the comedians. And Jordan Peele made this satire on race relations in America nowadays that is equal parts so hilarious and so terrifying that it is a perfect script. It is excellent acting. It is terrifying. It is funny. And there's just nothing ever like it that has ever been put out. And it is so, so fucking good.
And I noticed the bad guy from Billy Madison was in it, right?
Yes, Bradley Whitford. He is in the film.
You remember what the character's name was in Billy Madison?
Eric something. Right? Am I right?
Yes.
Eric.
I think you're right.
Eric. Yeah, it's Eric. I don't remember his last name, but Eric.
I just remember him choking on something towards the end of the movie.
Yes. No, Get Out is seriously, spend your money on Get Out. As well as Logan. Like, Get Out is a film that was made for $5-6 million and is completely and utterly flawless in every way.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing that one. And I also just read your review on Beauty and the Beast.
So Beauty and the Beast does not come out for another couple weeks.
I feel really vindicated. I feel very vindicated in my not having given a shit about the movie at any point.
It was so bad. But you can read that review on boomstickcomics.com.
I also want to ask why you're holding a knife. Brian.
Oh, well,
because we're all watching each other on video, and Brian's been holding a knife for like the last 10 minutes, and it looks like a very scary one.
I like to pretend it's like my claw, my adamantium claw.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
For the Logan movie. So, yeah, so that's our 30th episode, which was basically all on Logan, and we can't recommend Logan enough. I know, because seeing movies for a living, you tend to not see the same movie over and over again, but Logan and Get Out are ones that I will definitely pay to see again in the theater, and you should run to the theater to see them.
But we also do need to say, in all seriousness, don't take your kids to this movie. It is not. I mean, we were joking, saying it's a family-friendly movie, but in watching this, there were a few kids in the audience in the theater that I saw it in, and I was mildly horrified that they were there because it's brutal.
If your kids have seen Deadpool, they can see Logan.
If your kids have seen Deadpool, you're probably an awful parent.
No, you're an awesome parent. There's nothing wrong with language and violence. Nothing at all. We all watched this when we were younger. So if we all watched Alien when we were 8 years old, we can stomach this.
Alien and Deadpool are two very different movies, my friend.
There's an alien coming out of a guy's stomach. It's crazy. I will say it's a hard R. There's tons of language. There's some titties in it. And there's a lot of violence and gore.
A lot of claws going into people's faces.
Yes, but it's probably nothing that your kid has never seen before, unless they've just been privy to Beauty and the Beast type of stuff.
It all depends on how old they are.
Yeah,
I think that if it were my child, I would wait until about 14 years old to take them, because there's some disturbing shit in this movie. You know, when you're seeing Wolverine be impaled on a log and you see every bit of it, that's pretty gnarly.
It's pretty good. All right. I like it. I like it. Logan, go see it and go see Get Out. It's amazing. Mediocrity, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, BoomstickComics.com. Find us there. Subscribe, rate us, review us, tell us you love us. And we'll be back for episode 31 next week. Jonathan, Jeremy, tell our lovely audience where they can find you on social media.
You can find me, Jonathan Atterbury, at newamericanfitness.net, my website, or just New American Fitness on Facebook and Instagram.
Fantastic. You can
find me at Jeremy Megert Art at Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
Awesome. And we will be back with episode 31 next week with more Kevin Hart and Dwayne The Rock Johnson casting. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.